be able to present this to you. This is the second phase and only a subset of a study that was started by Timothy Hall. My collaborators for this particular project are Dr. Timothy Hall, who is the PI for the project. Peter Prokopek, who is a sociologist from Charles University in Prague, and Stephen Shaptog, who is the director of the Center for Addiction and Behavioral Medicine at UCLA in the School of Medicine. So, all right. So acknowledgments for 10 and also our funding, and we have no other conflicts. So this is a picture of Prague. Prague is a world destination for vacations. It is a cosmopolitan city. It's quite large. It is a center of commerce and trading, and it's a wonderful place to vacation. And our objective in terms of doing this study was to be able to look at HIV risks and protective behaviors among a community sample of women who attended social venues in central Prague. We did a study that was for both men and women. So this is a subset of only the women. So background. Prague was one of the Soviet bloc countries. Czechoslovakia was one of the Soviet bloc countries. And in 1989, they had what they called the Velvet Revolution. And in that revolution, what happened was the Czechoslovakia defended its right to be independent, and what they did was to later separate Czechoslovakia into Slovakia and to the Czech Republic in 1993. And so there were a lot of things that happened as a result of that. The Czech Republic became one of the countries of the European Union, and it changed very, very much over this time. So immediately after that, as the Czech Republic joined the Union, there was a large influx the first wave of the HIV epidemic. And the health policy for the Czech Republic was to be able to do all of the preventive measures that were being done in the rest of Europe. And so when they did this, they put in a lot of HIV testing and a lot of preventive measures. Well, what happened was that the HIV epidemic failed to happen. It just didn't occur the way that they were expecting. So in doing this research, our focus was to be able to look at an area in a country where there was very low HIV prevalence. And so the Czech Republic was the place that we selected. The other contributing part with regard to the women was contraceptive changes that were happening. In the early 90s, hormonal contraception just became available for everyone. And so what it did for the women of the Czech Republic was to delay their childbearing. It gave them a chance to be able to have more control of their sexuality, and it made a change in the way that they were having their children. Okay, so the countrywide HIV prevalence for the Czech Republic is less than 1%. It's less than 1/10 of 1%. Well, it's 1/10 of 1%, and this was just last year. And however, what we're seeing is that there is almost a 12.5% increase prevalence in women that's happening. And we're looking at women who don't have the normal reasons for acquiring HIV. So they're not involved with, sexual partners who are using intravenous drugs, and they're not involved with men, or they don't have the awareness of being involved with men who have sex with men. So, as I said before, the Czech Republic had a very, very strong preventive program for HIV, and what has happened over time, and to this day, they have trimmed down their budget for preventive measures. And so today their program focuses on men who have sex with men and treatment for those people who are living with HIV/AIDS. And so there has very little preventive program that is directed toward women. The only standing program that they have is a mandatory HIV testing at pregnancy and prenatal. So that's the condition for that we're looking at. So what we wanted to do was to be able to find out what was happening there. So I'm talking to you about a just very simple descriptive community-based study. It's a cross-sectional survey. This is the second set of surveys that were done. The first one was done in 2010. The second was done in 2012. And the second one was the first time that we looked at women. So in this particular study, 172 men and 124 women were involved. So our eligibility was older than 18, Czech residents, and they needed to either speak English or Czech. I'm not a Czech speaker, so we relied very much on students and other people from the Charles University to be able to help us do our surveys. And we provided the surveys, we had them translated, and they were all in Czech, and we had a few that were in English for those people who wanted to do that as well. And so we were really surprised that they were excited about doing this. So we did time site sampling. This is an interesting schema. What we did was we had 12 venues. They were all beer gardens, pubs, clubs. We wanted to be able to have as much of an overall view of people within the city as we could. And so we did establishments that were identified as gay, lesbian establishments. All of the establishments that we went to were all private sites. So the survey was designed so that it could be done in about 10 minutes. And so what we did was we walked up to people and we asked them if they wanted to participate. It would take 10 minutes. We told them what it was about, and they either responded or they didn't respond. We had a difficult time with having women to respond to this. The interesting thing that we found was that when we approached men, well, first of all, when men went to bars, beer gardens, or whatever clubs, they either came alone or they came with one other person. When women were in those settings, they came in groups. And if there was one woman who said, no, I don't want to do this, then the entire group said no. So we had a hard time getting women to be able to participate. Anyway, we used the NIAAA Audit C measure, we used CAGE, and we had questions related to sexual self-identification and sexual behaviors. And what we really wanted to find out was what they were doing with regard to HIV testing and whether or not they knew anything about, you know what, I completely lost my words there, about prophylaxis, either PrEP or post-prophylaxis. So anyway, the sample of women that we had, it was, as you would expect, this is Prague is a university city, and the majority of the people who responded to the survey were young, so we have these little bimodal distribution of women here, and you notice that they are very, very low, within about 35 to about 50, and then there is the second group. So this was actually a natural division that happened for these women. The young people were mostly college educated, and if you'll notice on the side, their education level, 65% of them had university educations. There were very few who had less than high school. This group of people in Prague were not necessarily representative of the whole country. So, you know, population-based, we couldn't at all call this population-based, but what we found was that the majority were single or they had no relationship. There were only 12% were married, and they have a relationship that is a legal relationship that is still considered to be single. The categories here seem quite bizarre to be able to say single and married, divorced, and then dating or no relationship. And it has to do with the fact that they have this other category of legal relationship. And 15% of the people had, the women had children. So their ages were 18 to 67. Sexual identification, they were pretty much in line with what the World Health Organization has identified as the distribution of heterosexual to, I'm going to use the term, sexual minority in this case. So if you can take a look and see what the difference was here, and we only had 24 who identified as a sexual minority. However, in the bottom part here, 114 out of the 124 had actually had sex with men, and they crossed lines of identification. So, with regard to their sexual relationships, those women who had sexual relationships with men, let me explain to you. When I put up the responders here, it has to do with, because there are skip questions based on what their sexual identity is, okay? So, essentially, you'll see the same response happening here. Primary relationships, 51% of the women who had sex with men had a primary relationship, and about the same thing is true for the women who had sex with women. 50% of the women who had sex with men had a duration of their relationship between 1 and 6 months. The categories were less than a month, 1 to 3 months, and then 1 to 6 months, and then 6 to 12, and then 12 and longer. The women who had sex with women tended to have longer relationships. 60% were reporting relationships greater than a year's time, and they identified no casual partners, which is very, very interesting. Okay, with regard to sexual behaviors, we identified that the majority of the women did not use condoms. We did not ask the question, what is your contraceptive method? What method of contraception do you use? So, 60% had never used a condom or a barrier method at all. And those people who did, they were only 18% of the women who were married, of the 40%, 18% of the married women, and only 37% of the women who reported having casual partners. So, I don't have a comparison with this. It would be nice to be able to know a comparison, maybe perhaps of women in Eastern Europe or in European countries, to be able to say if there is a difference there. But not understanding what their contraceptive method is, it really makes a difference, I think, for this particular question. 60% reported having casual sexual partners. Their partners ranged between 2 and 10 partners, and within the last year. And what was being reported was serial monogamy that was happening. So they were identifying primary partners, but what was happening was that they were saying that their primary partner, they identify a single partner, but they're changing, very often. So those, on average, about 3 primary partners in the previous year. Whereas the women who had sex with women, only 20% used barrier methods, any type of barrier methods. They, again, reported no casual partners. And this question about was there drugs or alcohol that was involved during the sexual act or their last sexual act or within the 2 hours prior to it, 37% of the women who had sex with women reported having used an alcohol or some or drugs at that time, and 44% of the women who had sex with women. So we're seeing just a little bit of an increase there in terms of substance abuse related to the sexual act. So HIV testing, close to 70% have not ever tested. And we all know that HIV testing is the cornerstone of our HIV prevention, and to be for people to be able to know what you know what their status is very important. Only 15% had tested within the year previous, within the 12 months before, and 17% tested prior to that. In to contrast, by their sexual categories, the heterosexual, 14% had tested versus 21% of the non-heterosexual or the sexual minorities. So it, you know, begs to say, you know, there are a lot of questions that we have to ask. What is the difference that's happening there? With regard to sexual precautions, what we used for that particular question was whether or not they had discussed their HIV status with their partner, so only 38% for the women who had sex with men, and 61% for the women who had sex with women. And one question that was also not necessarily targeted only for the women who were sexual minorities, because it was one of the general questions, but only the sexual minorities responded to that, and it was about whether or not women who had sex with women were at risk. And so 78% of the women who had sex with women felt that there was risk for HIV related to having sexual relations. Okay. Awareness of HIV prophylaxis. Pre and post prophylaxis had just been news of it, and availability was not there within the Czech Republic at that time. I think the CAPRISA reports were just coming out, the research with regard to CAPRISA were just coming out at that time. So 87% had never heard of any type of prophylaxis with regard to HIV. And relating this response of 45% saying that they would not be willing to use medication if it were available, it was actually, although it sounds like, well, you know, why would they not want to use something? It was really similar to what the first initial responses were to CAPRISA as well. Okay. With regard to substance use, the Czech Republic is known for its beer drinking, and it has the highest per capita consumption, volume consumption of beer in the world. And so when we asked about substance abuse with related to sexual behaviors, I thought that the response was reasonable in terms of what they said, but I was really surprised when they started talking about the volumes of beer and alcohol that they drank. So 97% had alcohol or drugs within the previous month. Now, these women almost consistently drank alcohol. 66% only drank alcohol. And then if they had other things, they had alcohol and other drugs. They didn't use drugs singly, you know, by themselves, like only marijuana or only cocaine or a Prevotin. Prevotin is their name for methamphetamines. It's their own their manufacturer of methamphetamine that is a little bit different than ours is here. So anyway, but the point is that, you know, these people are drinking a lot of alcohol, and on average, you know, they're claiming to drink 5 and 6 drinks on each occasion. And what we did was we looked at occasions of drinking as a 2-hour time period. And so this is an enormous amount of alcohol that's being consumed. Okay, so for multivariate, what I did was to do logistic regression, because the majority of the variables that we had were not continuous. So anyway, what we found was the age was, significant with regard to HIV testing, and what we found is that it was the younger women who had a greater likelihood of testing. And the model for discussion of HIV with their partners was actually wound up being a negative predictive factor here, and looking at if they had used alcohol with their last intercourse, if they had used condoms with their last intercourse, you're finding that there is significance there. And if they ever had sex with men, then there is a negative significance that, you know, with regard to the possibility of their discussing. So they just did not discuss HIV. I guess in interpreting all of this, the key thing that stands out is they really didn't see that they had great HIV susceptibility. And then with regard to condom use, again, you're seeing negative practices, a low likelihood of using condoms. So in particular, I was interested in seeing what happened with those people who had multiple partners, but the significance was that if they had a longer duration of relationship, if they were married, they were more likely to use a condom. If they had a new partner, you know, perhaps, but in general, for the total population, it was less likely that they would use condoms. So we haven't got a lot of information about what happens in those communities where there is a low prevalence of HIV, and about the ideas of using prophylaxis. The studies at UCLA, we have a couple of studies looking into our Black and Latino communities where there is a growing prevalence of HIV transmission, and the reception there for pre and prophylaxis has been very slow in coming. So we're just getting we're just now doing that work. So anyway, the implications: sexual risks, multiple partners, serial monogamy, and lack of safer sex precautions are present there, and the HIV risk that limited voluntary testing, and no discussion of HIV, and of course a limited knowledge of HIV prophylaxis. But you know, had just come out, so I kind of have to give them a little bit of slack about that. What we need to learn is contextual detail. We really need to find out what are the things that are behind their thinking, and to understand what their sexual risk taking is and their lack of HIV preventive actions. This is a population that is very, very important to study because they have such a low prevalence. They're about 10 years, a whole decade behind the rest of the world in HIV transmission. So they have been protected, you know, because they were, you know, in the Soviet bloc, and so now we can work there, you know, to be able to help them not have this problem. And preventive health messages and education campaigns are still needed, even though their prevalence is low. And what we're finding is their policy, their Ministry of Health and policy, there is really focused on the idea of only having to take care of the people that have HIV. Okay, considerations. We really need to have more, you know, attention to population-based representation. And like I said before, the context is very important, and qualitative inquiry is also something that I would like to see in terms of attitudes with regard to risk and prevention. Okay, so Prague again. Is that beautiful? It is gorgeous. It is just absolutely gorgeous. So, thank you very much.
Thank you. Wow, very thoughtful presentation, right? We're almost out of time, but are there a couple of questions?
I'm just going to
kind of get it simultaneously. What do you want to join?
Thank you all for your presentation. I just have a question for Leah about great question. So quite a few questions there. Great points. I'll start by saying, according to Huru, and what they've captured in terms of the duration of a reusable pad kit, they're looking at it lasting up to 6 months. So for folks that are getting the reusable pads, they're looking at that it would last as long as 6 months. So that's that piece. You know, I think in terms of sustainability, what really pops out to me in this project and with what Huru is doing is the education and job skills training. And so I think one of the common denominators across both of our approaches is that we're meeting women where they're at, which is where they're at is they either have no money or they have really limited money, and it needs that limited money needs to be prioritized to school fees, to food, to, you know, paying for things in their household. So with that, I think that one of the best sustainable efforts we can continue to contribute is around education and or vocational job skills training so that we can work with these women to get jobs. I didn't mention microfinance efforts. Youth for Life is thinking about doing something in terms of a very, what I would call informal microfinance. So it's really going back to, I think, the roots of microfinance, which are women coming together and sharing money. And so they've talked about that, but that's the extent of kind of what I know and what my responses would be. I hope that answers your question. And it's also something we're thinking about all the time. So I'm going to start by saying we are not doing an outcome evaluation. So what's really happening right now with the project is it's much more formative and process monitoring in nature because it's in its beginning stages. What I will say, though, is Huru International, because they have a variety of funding, most notably Elton John funding, I think they had Mac Makeup. They actually worked with FACES, which is a University of California San Francisco group in Kenya, and they produced a very impressive evaluation. They were most interested in the outcomes they looked at. They were actually able to longitudinally track these women, so they had actual school attendance data, and then they were looking at knowledge and intentions. They didn't track anything related to behavior in relation to a sexual and reproductive health program. Great question. We'd love to get there. We just don't. One, I think from a stage point of view, it's not ready for an outcome or even summative evaluation. That would be the first piece. And the second piece is there are no resources for it. But I definitely think it's quite feasible and will be needed in the future.
Thank you.
maternal and child